Okay, this morning we'll be in chapter 3 of James. I'll begin by reading verse 1. My brethren, be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation. For in many things we offend all. If any man offend not in a word, the same is a perfect man and able also to bridle the whole body. Behold, we put bits in the horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn about their whole body. Behold also the ships, which though they be so great and are driven of fierce winds, yet are they turned about with a very small helm, whithersoever the governor lists. Even so the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. Behold how great a matter a little fire kindles. The tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature and is set on fire of hell. For every kind of beast and birds and serpents and of things in the sea is tamed and has been tamed of mankind. But the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. Therewith bless we God, even the Father, and therewith curse we men which are made after the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceeds blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. Does a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? Can the fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries, either a vine figs? So can no fountain yield both salt water and fresh. Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not, and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descends not from above, but is earthly, sensual, and devilish. For where envying and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy, good fruits, without partiality, and without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. And now let's go back and see what's really there. That's the King James rendering. Back to the first verse, it says, my brethren, be not many masters. That word masters is teachers. What he's saying is, don't be quick to be a teacher. Because when you place yourself in the space and say, I understand, and now I'm going to tell you what God said, you better know what you're saying. So as I set myself here today in a position as a teacher, I better know what I'm saying because I'm responsible. And I know that I'm responsible for what I say to you. So if I say something wrongly, it's not you that's going to get it, it's me. Knowing I'll receive the greater judgment. Okay? Knowing that we shall receive a greater degree of judgment. Okay? I would expect that. Just like in the world it's supposed to work this way, that the lead man is the responsible person. Whoever's in head of a corporation, if the corporation fails, it's his responsibility if it fails, right? If there's an army platoon out here and they got a captain over the platoon, that captain's responsible for anything that goes on. Anything anybody does is his responsibility. If he don't know about it, it's still his responsibility. And it's saying the same thing. If we put ourselves in a place or a position of authority in God, we best know that we're supposed to be there. Because if you volunteer for it, it won't work. You know, you're eventually going to be falling on your face. In verse 2, it goes on to say, because in many things we what? It says offend all. Literally, it says we stumble. Absolutely all of us, it should say. We all stumble. Absolutely all of us. We've all stumbled. That's not the issue. If any man stumble or err, not in word. And this word is kind of funny. It's kind of unique. It means that it's talking about your thoughts. Okay? If you err, the words is not where the problem comes from. It comes from up here in the thought process, doesn't it? And comes out in a word. So it's words, it's thoughts came into words. If we have a problem, there's where it comes. If we can tame this thing up here, tame this mind that is attached to that tongue, what does it say we can do? The same as a what? A complete man, not perfect, but complete, and able also to bridle the whole body. See, if I can take control of my mind, just like you said earlier, Marlene, about stop the mind. I got accused a long time ago. I got called a liar, but I'm sorry. My mind can stop. And this man came into a teaching setting, and he said, I want everybody in the room to stop your mind. Not think of anything for the next 5 minutes. Just close your eyes and don't think of anything. And when he got through, 5 minutes later, he went around the room and said, what about you? What about you? What about you? What were you thinking of? And everybody told him things. Come to me, and I said, nothing. He said, you're a liar. I said, I beg your pardon. You asked me to stop my mind, don't think of anything. So that's what I did. He said, nobody can do that. And I said, no, you're talking about your mind. You can't control your mind. I can stop my mind. It's a blessing to be able to do that, I guarantee you. It's wonderful to be able to stop it and not think. I said, it can rest. And you know, he said, no, you're lying. He just kept calling me a liar. I said, call me what you want, but nothing in my mind. I'm clean. And you can, and that's what God wants us to do. He wants us to be able to control that mind. If your mind controls you, tell me there won't be confusion. If you can't stop that mind, what can it do? Anything it wants to. It can run off and just drive you crazy, keep you awake at night, just drive people. I know people that just so tormented in their mind, wonderful people, friends of mine, that, and I keep telling them, you got to stop this stuff. You got to stop it. Well, I don't know how. I said, well, you can't do it by getting mad and threatening to kill somebody. That really won't calm your mind down. If you kill somebody, you stop their mind, but won't do anything for you. I said, you've got to stop acting on your emotions. You know, make things very factual, and you'll be okay. So anyway, it says that you can control the whole body if you control your mind. And isn't the mind of Christ what we're shooting for? If we have the mind of Christ, do you think the mind of Christ can control the body? Absolutely. He said, behold, but if we put bits or insert bits in the horse's mouth, that they may obey us, and we turn about their whole body. He's saying, look how big and strong a horse is, and we can put this little piece of metal in their mouth, and we can make them go anywhere we want to. He's just using an analogy here. And behold also in verse 4, or look at the ships, which though they be, or are being so great and are driven by fierce winds, yet are they turned about by a very small rudder, whithersoever the governor desires to go. Just a little tiny thing can control that great big vessel. He's showing you something here. So our whole vessel, our whole lifestyle is controlled by that little thing right there. That's like a rudder on a boat. The ship could be 1,000 feet long, and just a little tiny rudder can just make it go anywhere. This thing can take us anywhere it wants to go. Did the Bible say this, that there is a power of life and death in the tongue? It can take us anywhere we want to go, can it? See? Where do you want to go? I know that's a commercial on TV. Where do you want to go today? Well, I just want to stay where I am. In His presence. Okay? Alrighty. Verse 5. Even so, and in this way it should say, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things, right? It boasts greatly. Behold, how great a matter, and the word matter. Let me find this again. How great a matter, that word matter isn't what's correct. It should say forest. How great a forest a little fire kindles. You can take one little match and set on fire. Look at California. Burn the state down with one match. So dry. And that's what he's trying to say. The little tiny details is where it's at. How many people in the church world today look for big cataclysmic miracles? They're all wanting these great big earth-shattering, what's the word they call it? Paradigm shift. They use the word paradigm. It's in the script. It's a Greek word, which just means a great big change, you know. And they use these Greek words to try to impress you like they know something, you know. But this big paradigm thing's happening, major things happening. But you know, that's not the key. The key is in the little things. What's he telling you? Everything here is about the little tiny things controlling everything. It's in the little tiny details of our life. If you leave, what's it say in the Psalms? The little foxes spoil the vines. They come in and chew at the little tender vines and kill them. See? It's the little things that we have to watch. Nobody's paying attention to the little cute foxes that run around, are they? Another one in the Psalms. Blessed is he that takes thy little ones and dashes their heads against the stones. Most gruesome verse I ever heard when I first read it under in the natural understanding. Taking a baby by the feet and busting its head against a rock. That's to the human mind, that's inconceivable. I mean, to do something to a child. But it's not talking about that. It was a parable. He was showing, it was a symbol of showing you, he was talking about the Babylonians. And the Babylonians were the enemies of the Jews. So he's saying, if you take this little Babylonian and destroy it now, it won't become this great big soldier that'll kill you and overtake you. It's the same thing with these little details of our life. If we deal with the little details while they're little details, no problem. But when you keep that thought in your mind and you cultivate that thing for year after year after year, like these things the church teaches, rapture and all these different things, like I said earlier about what do you mean by these different thoughts, you know, that the church has taught us. If you get those things out early, there's no problem. But man, when they're in there set in concrete and reinforced with steel bars, it's hard to get it out. And that's what God's trying to tell us. Get it now. Don't wait. Get everything out that is not of me. And your life will be great. It'll be great. But you've got to get it out before it gets real big. Where to leave off? Six. So we're starting. And the tongue is a fire. That's an analogy, isn't it? It's a comparison. The tongue is just like the fire that sets the world on fire. The little match that sets the forest on fire. We can say one word, and how many times you've seen people just explode on you? A world of iniquity or injustice. So is the tongue among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of what? Life is what it should say. Not nature, but life. Set fire the course of life and is set on fire of what? What's it say there? Word hell is Gehenna. Gehenna, G-E-N-N-A. Now, you know what Gehenna is? I was thinking this morning on this early, and I said, you know, I can't buy this thing hell, because first of all, I don't believe in the hell the church teaches to start with. Hell's a mental thing. And we're talking about the little things cluttering up our lives, the garbage that's in our lives. And do you know what Gehenna really means? It even says it in the language. It was the valley of the son of Hinnom, which was a garbage dump outside Jerusalem. Okay? Very close to Jerusalem, right next to it, just a thing where he threw all the garbage and trash. So I think it's kind of fitting that he's saying that it's set on fire from all the garbage in your life. Your life is set on fire by the garbage in your life. It was a garbage dump. So the garbage we hang on to in our life is what sets us on fire. Would you agree? It's all these thought processes that are not of God, but they're of a man and religion and out of the pit, you know, and that garbage is what messes us up. But that's what the word Gehenna means. It doesn't mean eternal fire and torment nowhere, but that's, it means it's a garbage dump, and that garbage in our life is exactly what messes us up. And who put it there? No, God did. Ecclesiastes 3, God placed the world in our heart. See, we hold on to it. See, we hold on to that garbage, but God put it there, and that's what we overcome. All the garbage in our life, we find these things that are untruth. See, take every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. If it doesn't match up with what Christ says, what should we do with it? And there's so many people say, but it's good. That's not God. We might use it. That's why people have their houses. We had a lady friend. She had so much stuff, you can almost think of it. She lived by herself, and she had so much stuff she couldn't get in her house. And I began to tease her about it. And when I teased her about it, she traveled with us. We was out traveling, and she traveled out to another place with the other meetings. And as we were doing it, I started making fun and teasing her. And I was teasing her with a serious side to it. But she finally caught hold of it. And she's one that took some ribbing real well, you know. And she caught on that I was really serious about this. The clutter in your life exposes what your mind's like. You understand what I'm saying? If your life is a total clutter around you, what do you think your thinking process is like? I mean, it's portraying how you live your life. And you couldn't get in her house hardly. It was so full. And she has this huge, huge home. I mean, big enough. And we had meetings in her home with 30, 40 people, and you like didn't even know we was there, you know. She could have 10 or 15 people stay with her, and you wouldn't even find the other people. You know, they're just lost, you know. And she's so full by herself. So we have to watch about this clutter, you know. But sometimes it's good to say things. But you know what she did when she came home? We brought her back, dropped her off, and we came on back to the States, you know. And guess what? She called us and said, I heard you. and I cut down a bunch of trees, and I've hauled stuff out. I've had yard sales. She said, you wouldn't believe what I've carried out of here. And she said, you know what? I still got a house full of stuff. I said, now how much more can you get rid of? Yeah. It was kind of a joke, and she laughed about it. But she's still doing it, isn't she? We still contact with her, and she's still getting rid of stuff. And stuff is what clutters our life up to where we can't be free to do what we have to do. Our stuff becomes so valuable. I know a couple right now local, and the woman has, she collects music boxes. And she's got 40, 50,000 of them. They built buildings, huge buildings. In the house, they got a huge, beautiful home, brick home. And it's just nothing. You can just walk through the front door, and there's a little path, and it's stacked up this high. And there's just a path to go to the TV and two chairs. And there's three chairs, four chairs. And that's all. You can just get to the chairs and a path through the next room, path to the kitchen table. And every place you look, it's stacked up almost to the ceiling in places. The whole upstairs is the same way, just a path to the bedroom, path to the bedroom. It's just boxes. She goes out and buys them every week. She's out hunting every day, hunting more of them. And, you know, she's got hundreds of thousands of dollars in music boxes tied up. But they're only valuable to her. And she never sees them because as soon as she gets them, she wraps them up in a package and just sticks them away. And she don't want anybody to know she's got them hardly because she's afraid somebody will come steal them. Now, tell me what's her life like. And her husband collects automobiles. And I've been riding him about all this junk. And I mean, he told me this week, just yesterday he said, I got rid of four cars this week. I said, well, another 10 or 15, you'll be able to park in the driveway. But he heard me, you know. But they hear, and sometimes it just takes a while to let go of that stuff. They put such a value on stuff instead of on the fellowship of God in our lives. Okay, where'd I leave off at? Seven? Yeah. Because every kind of beast and of birds and of serpents and also of things in the sea is tamed and has been tamed by... And it says, of mankind, but here's what the language really says, by the expanding human race. The language really says that. Everything's been tamed by the expanding human race. As we expand more, guess what we do? We have to tame different things. We have to take the ground and take authority over it because we're expanding. We have to take new ground. We have to take those animals we have to deal with. And I know the tree huggers don't like this, but, you know, animals aren't as important as people. Right, but they're worried about the external. And this is the one we worry about here. But the tongue, verse 8, can no man or no what? No human being can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. Now, this tongue doesn't have poison in it. You know it's got to be symbolism. But where's that tongue attached to? To the brain. Didn't Jesus said every evil comes out of the heart of man? And if you look at that word heart, it talks about the mind. See, out of the mind of humanity. Verse 9 goes on and said, therewith, or with it, we bless God, even the Father, and with it we curse humanity, which are made according to the likeness or the image of God. Weren't we created in the image of God? And yet we turn around and curse somebody? Somebody's got a problem, haven't they? And it's that duality in our minds. Out of the same mouth proceeds blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things should not in this way be. They should not in this way be. It shouldn't be we bless and curse out of the same mouth. If we're going to do anything other than bless, what should we do? Bite your tongue. Don't let it say it. Don't speak those things. Because once you speak those words, they're out. And when I was a child, I heard this saying they used to say all the time, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. But that's a lie, because words are the most deadly, painful, hurtful things you can have. You can hit somebody with a stick and it'll heal up in a few days. Those words will stay with them for a lifetime. How many people's lives have been destroyed? And I know kids that have been destroyed in my past, and they're still messes because of what people did to them in school when we were kids. Kids can be very cruel because they don't realize the implication of or repercussions of what they're saying and doing to people. And I've seen lives totally destroyed. They've committed suicide, done all kinds of crazy things because the children were so cruel to them. Okay. They don't realize that their words hurt people so badly. And I'm not telling you to go poke them in the eye because that's not right either. But that'd be quicker. It wouldn't be as bad. Okay. Verse 11, right? Does a fountain send forth from the, should say from, not at, but from the same opening, sweet water and bitter water? And literally it should say sweet water and salty water. But that's neither here nor there. You'll see down in another verse or so, it comes back out. Next verse. He's saying you shouldn't be able to say the good things and the bad things out of the same mouth, should you? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries? It's not natural, is it? Can a vine bear figs? Nope, it's not natural. So can no fountain both yield salt water and fresh water. See, that's the same as the verse above. They're talking about salt water and fresh water when they say bitter. Verse 13, who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him, out of a good conversation or a good lifestyle, good behavior, show out of a good conversation his works in what? Literally it said, in a humble wisdom. Let him show his works out of, or in a humble wisdom. In a humble wisdom. Do you know how many people that have some knowledge become very arrogant? But do you know that most people, a majority of people, cannot tell the difference between confidence and arrogance? And there's a big difference. But to the average mind, when they look at confident and arrogant, they don't see their difference. They see no difference. If you know what you're talking about, how should you act? Confidently. But the church world has said anybody that acts like that, they're arrogant. And people see you that way. Jesus was very arrogant then, wasn't he? In their standard. Because he was very confident of what he said. He didn't back down from anything, did he? He knew what he was saying. If you know what you're saying, why should you not act confident? I would much rather follow a confident person into battle than an arrogant person. When I was in Vietnam, I didn't want an officer that was arrogant. There were some of them too. But I wanted an officer, someone to lead me, that was confident in what he was doing. Capable. And today people just want people that have that silver tongue. And it won't get you anything. Verse 14. But if you have or hold or possess jealousy, and that's what the word should say, not bitter envying, but bitter is jealousy. Envying and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. Now this word strife, do you know what it really means? It's got a kind of an in-depth meaning. I'm going to read it out of another translation which really says it better. Let me get there just a second and I'll read you from the New American Standard, verse 14. Okay, it says this. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. Well, that word, it says selfish ambition in here, and it says envying and strife. Selfish ambition, in the Greek language, it talks about having a political ambition to promote yourself. So when someone is trying to make a point, there's two reasons to make a point: to show the truth to someone or to prove you're right. And too many people just want to be right. They don't want to know the truth. They just want to be able to say, I'm right. Well, if I'm right in my eyes, but I'm wrong, what good did it do me? It's foolishness. I want to know the truth, even if it makes me look like a fool because I've said something wrong. I still want to know the truth because the truth is the only thing that can set me free in this world. The truth that I know. Okay? Verse 15. This wisdom, that they're talking about, this worldly wisdom, descends not from above or not from God, but is earthly, sensual, and devilish. Literally, it says in the language, in the Greek, it says, it is worldly, it is soulish, and demonic. This natural man, this natural thought process. Now, when we say this natural thought process is demonic, why not? Now, everybody thinks when you say the word demonic or demon, you're thinking about spirits running around. Demons are nothing more than thought processes. Okay? If the carnal mind is the devil, hello, isn't it? Isn't it the accuser of the brethren? Okay, if that's the carnal mind, then the devil and the devil's the carnal mind. His messengers would be what? What is the mind's messenger? Thoughts, just messages it sends out. Okay, just like the word what it says his devil and his angels. It's the same Greek word agalos as Jesus sent. God sent his messengers. Agalos, angels, same thing, same word, but it's used in a positive or a negative context. So the carnal mind there, all it is thoughts coming out of your mind. So he said, these things, this wisdom doesn't ascend from above, from God, but it comes, it's worldly, it's earthly, it's worldly, soulish, and demonic. Now we get into some good understanding here. In the 16th verse, first word should be because. Because where jealousy, it's not envying against, jealousy and strife is, there is confusion. Makes sense, don't it? The literal language says, the Greek language says, for confusion, it says there's instability or disorder. Well, if you don't have any harmony, what else could there be? But disorder and instability. And every evil work. Did he say some evil works? He's saying, for where jealousy and strife is, when you have this jealousy and strife, every evil work is there. That pretty well labels it, don't it? Every evil work. Not some of them, all of them are there. So when you have fighting and carrying on amongst people in the church world, how much fighting and inbreeding and biting and deceptions and all this stuff going on, and every evil work is there because of that jealousies. It's everywhere. And the church world can't see it. They think they got it right, see, because they've never heard the truth of God. They don't know what the truth is. If we know the truth, what right do I have to be upset? I don't have any rights to be upset with anybody. I'm not God. If God's not upset with them, what right do I have to be upset with them? God loves them all. Has different intentions for each person, different purpose for each person, but he still loves them all. If that isn't true, then God lied. And it's all a lie, but I know it's true. He loves them all. Verse 17, but the wisdom that is from above or from God is first pure, then peaceable, and gentle, and easy to be entreated, or literally obeyed. Easy to be obeyed. See, the wisdom from God is easy to be obeyed. Full of mercy, or literally compassion. It's full of compassion. God's wisdom is full of compassion. Not saying, I'm right and the rest of you are going to hell. That's what the church world says. Our doctrines are right and everybody else is wrong. Well, I'm going to tell you, there's only one truth. Straight up, there is only one truth. But you better have the truth before you start talking like that. You better know you're saying the truth. That goes back to the first verse. Don't be quick to be a teacher, because knowing you're going to receive a greater judgment than anybody else. You better know what you're doing is right. Don't be in a hurry. You know, Moses didn't get to start ministering until he was after 80 years old. Yeah. He got wise enough to understand he wanted somebody else to do the talking. He understood the responsibility he had. He was trying to get away from the responsibility. Okay. But full of mercy or compassion and good fruits, without partiality and without what? And the word, and here's what it should say. The word without hypocrisy should literally be one word. It should say, without partiality and sincere. Sincere. There's two things about sincere. You can be sincere, and you can be sincerely wrong, or you can be sincerely right. So you got to know where you're at. Not just think you're there, but know where you're at. Let me read another verse here I meant to do a while ago. This is in the 16th verse, I meant to read it, and I got carried off. My thoughts went on down. But I wanted to read this out of the New American Standard again, verse 16. The King James says, for where envying and strife is, there is confusion in every evil work. But the New American Standard says it this way, for where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder in every evil thing. Good rendering of it. Verse 18, and the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace. Then what's all the fighting? The backbiting? Cursing. What is all about? The fruit of righteousness is sown in peace, not of them, but by the ones that make peace. The only way you're going to sow the seeds of righteousness is in peace. And the only way you can do that is by one that makes peace. That means you're not arguing, fighting, biting, you know, just total disagreements all the time. I know some people, I don't care what you say, they'll go the other way. No matter what you say, you could say, this ceiling is white, and they'd say, no, it's not, it's black. If you say, we're sitting inside, no, we're outside. As obvious as the day is long, they'll say something opposite of it, no matter what you say. Just so they can say, I'm right. Yeah. Is that making peace? You know, even though you can be right, sometimes it's best not to say anything. Didn't Paul say, let the ignorant be ignorant? Ignorant people sometimes have no ability to understand what you're saying. And wisdom is, let them be ignorant. If that's where God wants them to be, if God wanted them to hear it, what would they do? Hear it. And when you come to this, it's coming right back to peace. Right back to peace. If I understand this is God doing everything, what am I upset? What am I upset about? Lois and I was talking this morning. We were sitting on the swing outside today, and before anyone got here early this morning, she said, I'm going to ask you something, and said, I may be wrong, but I see something. You remember what she said? And she said, what's this chapter about? What's most people think this chapter's about? What do most people think it's about, really? About the tongue. But it's not. It's about that. See, because the tongue is controlled by that. The tongue is just a piece of meat. It's just a muscle laying there. And until this thing gives it a command, it does nothing, does it? It doesn't do anything on its own. But it can control everything, but this controls. It's really about the mind. And isn't that what this whole book is about? The mind of Christ? It's showing you there are two thinking processes. What's it say in James 1 and 8? Double-minded man, unstable in all of his ways. It's all about the mind. And people lose the focus on one word about the tongue because it's kind of using the tongue as an analogy, and they focus on that instead of on the big picture of everything. It's about the mind. Here's what's got to be controlled. It's about disciplining the mind. If we can discipline the mind, just what Lloyd said about disciplining a while ago. What did you say about it? Oh, about grace, about it's inside, but it's got to be outside. What's in here has got to go outside. It's not grace until it's shown forth. It's inside, it's not grace. It's grace when I show it forth. Until it comes out of you, it's nothing. It's just something inside of you. Yeah, I won't say it's nothing, but it's nothing to be seen. And we need to be seen. Aren't we supposed to be a written epistle to be read of all humanity? Well, if we don't express what's inside of us, how can we? And if it's something that expressed that's not correct, what should we do with it? Tear that page out of the book and throw it away, right? Just tear that page out and throw it away because we don't need that page. Any questions? Comments? Rocks to throw? We take them all.